From the studios of WNIS News Radio 790 in Norfolk, Virginia, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. You know, I'm here for the WNIS, WTAR, that's their sister station's 17th annual Talk Fest, which takes place tomorrow. So if you live in the area, come on out. I know Dr. Floyd from the NighthawkZone.com, he will be here. On Saturday. Next hour, we'll have those open lines, so get ready for that. First, some quick news, and then a very special guest for you this hour. Cold and cough medicines don't work in children and shouldn't be used in those younger than six, according to federal health advisors. The over-the-counter medicines should be studied further, even after decades in which children have received billions of doses a year. The outside experts told the Food and Drug Administration that the children just shouldn't receive them. The FDA isn't required to follow the advice of the panels outside of experts, but does so most of the time. And U.S. health officials and experts are seeking to calm schools and parents over the superbug that we've been reporting on over the last week or so. The headlines are disturbing. Schools closing for disinfection, a 17-year-old dead from a drug-resistant superbug. And the officials say, though, that this is not a new emergency, and the best way to deal with the bacteria is simply to wash your hands. The bug causing most of the concern is a staph called MRSA, a version of the bacteria that causes pimples, sinus infections, and in rare cases, meningitis and blood infections. The bug made headlines this week because of a report in the Journal of the American Medical Association that some 94,000 serious infections and nearly 19,000 deaths in 2005, most of them in the hospitals, now seems to be spreading outside of hospitals. 21 schools in Virginia closed when a 17-year-old student died there. The United States Air Force says it will punish 70 airmen involved in the accidental cross-country flight of a nuclear-armed B-52 bomber following an investigation that found widespread disregard for the rules on handling such munitions. The probe into the August 29-30 incident in which the B-52, inadvertently armed with six nukes, was flown from Minot near the Canadian border to Barksdale in Louisiana near the Gulf of Mexico without anyone noticing the mistake for more than a day. A Seattle woman has made a rape claim against magician David Copperfield. The woman told the Seattle police that the magician molested her while she was in the Bahamas. Because the alleged incident happened abroad, the woman did not report it until she returned back to the United States. Seattle officials then turned the case over to the FBI. The FBI raided a Las Vegas warehouse used by Copperfield on Thursday. Copperfield has been contacted by law enforcement authorities, and the FBI has conducted an investigation in Las Vegas where the magician regularly performs. In South Bend, Indiana, four officers investigating a burglary were attacked, not by a fleeing burglar, but by a swarm of fleas in a filth-ridden vacant home. The tiny biting attackers were so overwhelming that the South Bend patrolman had to be decontaminated and ended up being sent home early from their shifts. Stock market took it on the chin today, all because of the housing market. Now people are beginning to panic, down 366 points, the Dow Jones Industrial. You know, not so long ago, the idea of live pictures being sent through the air and into a magic little box in our living rooms and homes was the stuff of science fiction, wasn't it? Well, right now, we take for granted that we can flip through hundreds of channels, witness live events taking place anywhere in the world. In a moment, we'll be talking about when television was young. Ed McMahon joins us right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, live here in Norfolk, Virginia for TalkFest, which takes place tomorrow. This is going to be an hour you will not forget. From pots and pan salesmen to Johnny Carson's famous sidekick, launching presidential candidates, being the host of Star Search, co-host of the Jerry Lewis MDA telethon, Ed McMahon knows how television began because he was there when television was young. He's our special guest this hour on Coast to Coast. Ed, how are you?
I'm good, George. Good to talk with you.
You too. You know, it's fitting for me to be here in Norfolk, Virginia, Navy land, as I call it, 9 years Navy for me. I wonder how many people know that you were a Marine pilot a long time ago.
Not many people know that. We didn't spread that around too much. So I was a Marine fighter pilot, and I'm very proud of my Marine connection. And I know Norfolk, and I know that is Navy land and also Marine land.
Ed, I hail from Los Angeles and St. Louis. I go back and forth when I do this program, and I know a lot of people at Anheuser-Busch. One of them, Jerry Clinton, sends his regards to you.
Oh, what a great guy. Yeah, thank you. Return the regards from me, please.
He's listening on his radio right now to you. Hey, Ed, you know, a lot of us, of course, have grown up watching you with Johnny Carson doing Star Search on the telethon with Jerry Lewis. You've seen all kinds of changes in television. Do you miss the old days of television? Was it better then than it is now?
I wouldn't say it was better, but it was certainly more interesting because you did everything. You know, I started in 1949 when television was just kind of bubbling, and I had the first afternoon show in television. I was on from 12 to 3. I was the host, the writer, the producer, the makeup man. I was everybody, and that was fun. I mean, it was fun to be around this bubbling industry in the early years, so I missed that. You know, now you have so many other people helping you. It's not quite the same. But I think that, you know, it turns out a better show, certainly. But it was great in the old days, let me say that.
The big break for you came with, what, was it Who Do You Trust in 57?
Yeah, 58. I joined Johnny Carson on a game show in the afternoon, a quiz show, really, Who Do You Trust? And we became instant buddies. Let me tell you what happened the first day, George.
Okay.
You know, I'm reading the sponsors. We had six sponsors. And I had to get out their copy line. You know, the line was Swan's Down Cake Mixes, the cake mixes you can trust, whatever it was. The very first day, now the audience at home didn't see this, but the audience in the theater, or in the little theater, he set fire to my script. Now here I am trying to read charcoal. It's burning in my hands. And the audience went crazy. He thought that was pretty funny, so he did it every day for 4 years.
What a guy. The evolution to The Tonight Show, how did that all happen for both you and Johnny?
Well, he got the gig. You know, he had done the show, filled in for Jack Parr a number of times, and he was like the heir apparent. He got the job. I didn't know he was going to take me. You know, you never presume anything. You hope it's going to happen.
Sure.
It was going to be a great arrangement. But he never said a word to me. No one told me. And all over the paper were stuff about, you know, Johnny Carson taking over October 1st. The Tonight Show, in fact, I had to fill in with guest hosts for 6 months because of his contract with ABC. He couldn't get free until October. So anyway, finally one night we're at Sardi's restaurant next door. There was a bar next door called Sardi's next to the little theater where we did the Who Do You Trust show. And in the middle of a conversation, he said, well, when we take over in October, and I said, wait a minute, you know, wait a minute, Kemosabe. I said, what does that mean when we take over? He said, oh, I'm taking you with me. And that was his attitude. He didn't even bother to tell me, but he was taking me with him.
Instant success. He was quite kind of shy off camera, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He's a very private person, very shy. And I wrote a book years ago, bestseller, called Here's Johnny. And in that, I quote him, and this is him speaking now. He said, Ed, I'm great in front of 10 million. I'm lousy in front of 10. And it was so true about him.
Did you ever see him lose his cool, Ed? Lose
Not
his temper?
Really. He was always very cool, very much in command. And I like that about him, that he never, you know, he always had the situation well in hand.
You know what was so great about that program, though, was the camaraderie that you two shared. Because, you know, the way that you reacted, the way that you laughed, the feedback between both of you, you both made that show successful, Ed.
Thank you. And I think that started from that very first day. You know, we became buddies. If we had met in the Marine Corps, we would have been pals. You know, we would have hung out together. And on the last show, he said this. You know, he said, you know, here's my rock, a man sitting right beside me. I couldn't have done this show for 30 years without him sitting here. But then he said, you know, a lot of couplings that you see in television or in the movies are not necessarily friends. It's not necessarily that they're good pals. But Ed and I are good friends. We have dinner every once in a while we hang out together, we have a good time together, and I think that showed on the air, and the audience liked that. They liked the fact that we were friends.
What was, for you, Ed, on The Tonight Show, your most memorable moment, a classic moment for you?
Oh, boy. Well, I just mentioned when he called me his rock, when he said he wouldn't have been able to do the show without me sitting there for 30 years. That was a pretty memorable moment for me.
Then, you know, your evolution into Star Search, which, you know, to me, American Idol now is almost like an offshoot of that.
Yes.
Because you went out there looking for talent, and you did that for quite a long time.
Yeah, 12 years we had that. And we looked for everything, not just singers. We looked for dancers. We looked for comedians. We looked for groups. We had kids on. We had all kinds of categories. But I think Star Search was the forerunner of a lot of these shows that are on now, like Dancing with the Stars, the Singing Bee, American Idol, as you mentioned. You know, all these shows got their genesis from Star Search, I believe.
Ed, you have continued to remain one of the good guys, and not only in television, but in this country. And like I said, I know people who know you personally, and I'm telling you, each one speaks so highly of you, and it's an honor to have you on the program with us tonight.
That's very nice. Thank you, George.
When television was young, so why did you decide to write this?
Well, I was pursued, as a matter of fact. The editor, Larry Stone, a gentleman that worked at the publishing company, he had this idea, and I liked the title, and he pursued me. I was down in Florida working, and he flew down to meet with me, and he kind of convinced me that I was the guy to write this, because you said earlier that I was around when it started, you know, when television was just beginning. Most of the television that we now take for granted, as you know, was the early days, started around 1949, and I began my show in 1949. I actually was on a show 2 years earlier. I was going to Catholic University of America in Washington, and I was in a play that was broadcast from the basement of the Wardman Park Hotel on a coaxial cable through Philadelphia and onto New York. And that was the first use of the coaxial cable, admitting the fact that you could go from city to city with a broadcast. But people, you know, can't believe this. It, you know, like, it's hard to believe that there was a time when there was no television. And it's true.
It's ironic. You were born in Detroit, Ed. So was I. You went to Boston College. I went to the University of Detroit. A lot of parallels there.
Yes.
In the beginning of television, and when I started in this business, I would, not that I'm that much younger than you, but I would just see the things that all of you would do in this field, and it was infectious. It was something that I wanted to get involved with. How many people that ultimately made it big in Hollywood, like Lucille Ball and Johnny Carson, yourself, Jerry Lewis, how many of them actually thought this would happen to them?
Well, you know, you never know. You have talent, you apply yourself, and there's a lot of breaks in this business, as you well know. You know, a lot of things come along, some of them you don't get. Some great ideas might happen, and you might not be the right person. But, you know, if you persevere, if you keep struggling, keep trying, you know, you mentioned some heavyweights when you mentioned Jerry Lewis and Lucille Ball. And, you know, I talk about them in the book. I, you know, bring up a lot of stuff about them. But it's one of those things. I mean, talent will out. If you have talent and you try hard and persevere, there's a chance you'll become a big star.
We just lost a talented one with Joey Bishop this weekend.
Yes, indeed.
Last of the Rat Pack. Did you know him?
I did, yes. And he was quite a man. He was he had a great attention to detail. I would send him a Christmas card every year. And right after the holidays, I'd get a phone call from him thanking me for the card. Well, you don't hear that from everybody. You mail a lot of cards out at Christmas. You don't hear that from him. But that's the kind of guy he was. And I loved how his humor would just put kind of a cap on what the Rat Pack was doing. Everybody was doing crazy things, and he'd have one of those deadpan lines of his and destroy everybody.
Would you do it all over again the same way if you had that chance?
Oh, if I was lucky, I sure would. I loved every minute of it. I was very happy to have a chance to be in this business, and I'd love to be a broadcaster. And you mentioned Anheuser-Busch. I had a 30-year run with them, and what a nice company to work for. They were wonderful to me, and that's what I liked. I liked those long, long arrangements. I spent 34 years with Mr. Carson, with Jerry Lewis. I just finished my 40th telethon, and I've never missed a telethon. And I'll give you a number, George. You won't believe we have raised over those years $2 billion. So that's great to credit of Jerry Lewis that we do that, and it works out that well.
How's he feeling now, Ed?
He's much better. He's had quite a bout with illnesses, but he's much better. He was much stronger this year than he's been in many years.
See, that's the one thing. I mean, we've had these classic people who have had such a contribution to the arts and have touched so many lives. I mean, a lot of people don't really realize how people on television, how people in the movies have affected them until they meet them or until they're gone, like Joey Bishop, for example, or Johnny, now that Johnny's gone. I mean, there's a void there.
Yes, it's unfortunate.
When you were growing into television and The Tonight Show just kept skyrocketing, did you expect it to get as popular as it did?
No, I didn't. I thought it would run about 4 or 5 years. That's what all of our predecessors had done, Steve Allen and Jack Parr. And I figured it would run about 4 or 5 years. We'd have a nice run. It was a nice gig. But I didn't expect it would run 30 years. You know, and after it went about 5 years, then I figured, well, we'll do 7. And we did 7. I thought we'd do 10. We did 10. I figured, well, we might do 15. Never dreaming that we would do 30 years of The Tonight Show.
What it looked like it was always fun for you guys.
Oh, it was. We had a ball doing it, you know. And Johnny said something to me the opening night. We were walking down into the studio the first day, October 1st, 1962. And we were going down to check the lights, who stands where. I was going to stand here, you were going to stand there. And as we walked down, I said, Johnny, I said, how do you see my role down there tonight? He said, Ed, I don't even know how I see my own role. Let's just go down and entertain the hell out of them. And that was his attitude for the whole 30 years. We tried to entertain the hell out of them.
Well, and you both did. Did you two ever look at each other and say, my gosh, we're getting paid for this and we're having a good time?
We should be arrested.
I love. Do you have time to take phone calls with us?
Sure, I do.
Okay, we're gonna come back in just a moment. But also tell us the book When Television Was Young. It's out now, right? It came out in September, so people can get it, I guess, at bookstores, Amazon.com, all over the place.
It's everywhere. Yeah.
You know, it's one of those classics that if you're into television, to read up on some of the nuances. For example, I did not know that CBS got hate mail when they had Lucy and Desi Arnaz on because of their marriage. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they thought that was a interracial couple, and they didn't approve of it. And they got a lot of bad mail, and there was like a boycott. It was terrible.
Man, if times changed, haven't they?
That's right.
And lots of other things, too. And, of course, you being from Detroit, I'm sure you remember Soupy Sales, huh?
Oh, yes. I was never lucky enough to get a pie in the face. That was considered a great badge of honor if you got a pie in the face. Even Frank Sinatra got a pie one night. But I didn't know Soupy, and I wasn't around that area when he was doing his show. But he was, still is, I guess, a very funny guy.
All right, stick with us, Ed McMahon. I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to open up the phone lines now. We're going to continue chatting with the icon, Ed McMahon, and then we'll take your phone calls as well right here on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, that's very simple, too. That's george@coasttocoastam.com. I'm in Norfolk, Virginia for their 17th annual Talk Fest, which takes place tomorrow. A lot of people are out here. Dr. Laura's here. Glenn Beck is out here. Clark Howard is here. Sean Hannity is here. Everybody's out here. And then I'm here. I'll be back. And in a moment, you're going to have an opportunity to talk with Ed McMahon next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Okay, Ed, now you can solve the biggest question of the century for us. Is it Ed McMahon or Ed McMahon?
Well, it's, you know, it's spelled M-C-M-A-H-O-N. And we had a lot of kidding about the fact that my grandfather was supposed to have invented mayonnaise, or at least one of his chefs did. So it's McMahon, but everybody says McMahon, so we can go with it, McMahon. It's okay.
Hey, by the way, I just got an email in from someone in Pennsylvania, and he says, talk about the old days when you were in Philadelphia. You used to do a show called The Million Dollar Movie, and he said he remembers you walking into a vault bringing out the movie.
That's right. There's a picture of me doing that in the book, by the way. But, you know, the movie companies wouldn't let us have any good movies. So I'd have this vault open at 11:25. This giant vault door, like a bank vault door, would open. I'd walk in with all these racks of movies and bring out, you know, a tin holder of a movie holder, and it would be Butch Mines the Baby, you know, a great film like that. And it was our million-dollar movie. They were more like $1.29.
Let's take some phone calls. We've got Ed McMahon until the top of the hour here. First-time caller line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. It's a pleasure to be talking to you, two of the giants of broadcasting.
Oh, no, there's one giant, not me. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Cleveland.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
I want to ask Ed about his radio days, specifically about the Monitor program that originated out of New York, and what he remembers about that and what he liked about it.
Well, I thought it was great radio. I know that, I'm sure, George, you remember that.
Yes.
We did it from 30 Rock. I was the Saturday afternoon host. There were five hosts. We were on all weekend, and I did that for about 5 years, and I loved it. I mean, that was really good radio. We'd have guests on, of course, for interviews. We played good music, and we kept up to date with the news, and I really enjoyed my time. As far as I was concerned, that was the best radio around.
Ed, when you started, and I assume as a youngster, what got you interested in the business?
Well, my grandfather, I lived up in Lowell with my grandfather and grandmother. My parents traveled a lot, so they would leave me there every summer, and a lot of weekends, a lot of holidays, I'd be there. My grandfather was quite a man. He wrapped the house in wire and made the whole house an aerial, and he put the earphones on my head when I was about 7 years old. And I heard this guy talking from KDKA in Pittsburgh. Now, it may be apocryphal, but I was fascinated first that the wire was picking up a sound coming all the way from Pittsburgh. But I was more fascinated with the guy speaking in Pittsburgh. And I convinced myself that I should be that guy. And it must be true because about 3 years later, 3 or 4 years later, I started practicing in my grandmother's parlor. I would read Time magazine aloud into a flashlight like it was a microphone. And I would, you know, do the news. I'd do the sports and the weather and the current events. Whatever was happening, I would do it and read it, you know, into my little flashlight. And I thought I was broadcasting. And I had a dog that used to listen to me called Valiant Prince. It was a big comic strip that was very hot called Prince Valiant. So I named him Valiant Prince. And, George, I never knew who Valiant he was until I heard my first recording of my voice. And I figured it was before it changed. I figured this dog is really Valiant to be listening to me.
I love it. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi. I was just wondering if Ed had ever met Johnny's brother. Him and his wife, Johnny's wife, that is, had just come to Lincoln to do a tribute to Johnny a couple weeks ago, and he was on TV, and I was amazed at the similarities of how they looked.
I didn't even know that Johnny had a brother, Ed.
Oh yeah, Dick. He was our director for many, many years, and he directed Wheel of Fortune for many, many years. No, he was a very, very nice young man. Still is, and not at all like his brother Johnny. He was very quiet. You know, not a jokester, not a big funny guy, but just a nice, loyal guy. And he and Johnny were very close.
I was surprised, Ed, when Johnny retired, he just went away.
Yeah.
And obviously he did that on purpose. That was what he wanted.
Yeah.
But why? Did he ever talk to you about that?
Not really, except I knew that, you know, his attitude was he had done 30 years of top-notch television, and he didn't want to water it down by doing something else that wasn't quite as great. You know, it's like that heavyweight champion of the world who retires as a champion, and then he lure him back for one more fight,
yeah,
and he gets hurt, you know, or he doesn't win. You know, like I worried about George Foreman. There was a lot of talk that George Foreman would come back and do one more fight, and I worried about that because George is such a great guy, and I didn't want to see him, you know, lose the title. But I think Johnny felt the same way. He did 30 years of great television. Why water that down with something else? And he was quite comfortable in his retirement. He had a great boat. You know, we talk about our friend George, Jerry Clinton.
Yeah.
He's got a great boat. But Johnny had this big, beautiful boat named Serengeti. He had gone to Africa several times. And he loved that section of Africa, the Serengeti. And he named his boat the Serengeti. But he loved to be on that boat. So he had a nice thing to retire to.
And he went out on top. And I guess that's all you have to do.
Exactly.
Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air with Ed McMahon on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Shalom.
Well, Hello. Shalom to you. And where are you calling from?
Skagway, Alaska.
Okay, sir. Take it away.
Yes, I have a question for your guest tonight.
Uh-huh.
And I'm quite honored to speak with you, Mr. McMahon.
Thank you very much.
You're just an icon in radio history. I have one question for you, sir.
Yes, go ahead.
I believe I may have met a family member, relative of yours, and I'm wondering if this name may sound familiar to you. Irene Keyhole?
Irene Keyhole?
Yes.
God, it doesn't register right at the moment, but that's probably my fault, not her fault. Anyway,
there was a Donald Keyhole.
My middle name is Irene, but I don't recognize that as a relative, but I hope you'll forgive me for that.
Okay. Send us an email. We'll send it on to Ed. I meet a lot of people in my life as well, Ed, and sometimes I forget who they were. Donald Keyhole, though, was a giant in the UFO community, some of the things we do here.
Yes.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with Ed McMahon on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
How you doing? Just want to say Semper Fi to both of y'all. I'm a former Marine myself.
Great.
I was listening to a radio show out of St. Louis in morning time, I think it was 2 years ago or so, and Mr. McMahon was on there, and he spoke about how he met Marilyn Monroe before he had to, I believe, go to Korea.
Yes.
And I was wondering if he would tell that story, and I'll listen to it off there. Thank you both.
Okay.
Very much.
You are very welcome. Go ahead, Ed.
It's a great story. I was at El Toro, at that time, the big Marine Air Base out on the West Coast. I was on my way to Korea, and somebody invited me to go see a movie being made. Of course, I was all excited. I was just a local television star in Philadelphia. I was not on the national scene at all. But I went out to see this movie, and what it was How to Marry a Millionaire, starring Marilyn Monroe. Well, it was quite exciting for me to be standing there watching him do this movie and watching Marilyn Monroe, probably the most beautiful woman that ever lived, I would imagine. She was really a knockout. I'm looking at a picture of her right now on my wall, and somebody told her that I was in the studio, and I was on my way to Korea. And she was on her way because she was going to go entertain the troops over in Korea. So she wanted to meet me and learn about Korea. Well, I didn't know anything about Korea. But anyway, she invited me into her trailer. She had a trailer right on the movie set in the studio. And we sat there and talked for about 20, 25 minutes. The most charming, most delightful, most wonderful young lady I'd ever talked to. And when the thing was over, when I knew the conversation was coming to a close, I said, Miss Monroe, I said, if you would do something great for me, if you'd sign a picture and I could take that back to the squadron, the guys in the squadron would go ape if we saw each other together. So they said, I'll be glad to do that. But also, let's take a picture, go outside, and I'll be right out. I want to freshen up. Now, she looked pretty fresh to me right then.
Sure.
But anyway, I go outside. Out she comes, and she's got this mink coat tucked around her. She's holding it up by the neck. Just before we take the picture, she looks at me and she says, Ed, I don't have anything on underneath this. Now, if you could see this picture, She looks pretty great looking up at me, and I look very happy. One thing about Marines, they're great warriors, but they also have great imaginations.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
I love it. She had a karma about her, Ed, I'm sure. When she walked really into a room, everybody knew it, didn't they?
Yeah, they sure did. And talk about a beautiful girl. I mean, all of the beauties that you now know wrapped up in one would just barely make a Marilyn Monroe.
So true. So true. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Ed McMahon on Coast to Coast. Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Rich from Phoenix. I just got a couple questions for Mr. McMahon, and thanks you guys for serving. Hey, first of all, I was just wondering, I live here in the Phoenix area, and I'm 47 years old. I'll be in January. I know I'm pushing it a little bit, but I just wonder how I get started, like doing voiceovers for commercials and whatever, if you know anybody in the area or a talent agency I could talk to. Because people have mentioned, they say, hey, you got a good voice. You should be a, you know, announcer or something like this, or a DJ or whatever. And also, question number two, how is Jerry Lewis normally with people? Because I met him one time when I was working security at the Sahara back in Vegas about 28 years ago, somewhere around there. And he was less than pleasant when I said hi to him. I just wonder if he's normally that way. And I can listen off the air.
Okay, well, let me get, I'll answer the job question for you. We all started on the bottom, and we all gave 120%. And so that's what I suggest you do. Wherever you live, just keep pounding on doors. Jerry Lewis had two different sides of him, Ed, I think. He didn't like to be bothered with a lot of people he didn't know, and he came across as being kind of abrupt, didn't he?
Yes, he did. You nailed it right on the head. He, you know, he was great in front of that camera, but off the air, he just was not really good with people, unfortunately. And you hit it right on the head when you said that.
Let's go next to east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast, and where might you be?
Good morning. This is Glenn calling from Harlingen, Texas.
Hey, Glenn. Thanks for calling.
Mr. McMahon, it's an honor to speak to an F4U driver.
Oh, good. Thank you.
I was wondering if you had any air-to-air victories and could tell us a little bit about your service experience.
Well, I was in World War II. I was an instructor and a test pilot, and I taught in the great Corsair. You mentioned the Corsair, and a lot of people know that plane because of the inverted gull wings. If they remember seeing a series, Pappy Boyington, they know, you know, the Black Sheep Squadron, and that's with the planes that they flew. In fact, a couple of my students were from the Black Sheep Squadron, and I flew that plane, and I was very happy with that. And I was supposed to go aboard the first all-Marine carrier. They were going to have a carrier, George, with just Marine pilots. They thought it'd be very hot. In each squadron, there's a couple of Marine pilots, but it's a naval squadron. But in this carrier, they wanted to have all-Marine pilots, and I qualified. You'd have 1,000 hours in the Corsair, and I qualified. But they dropped the bomb and the war was over, so they never, you know, totally fitted out that carrier. But the rest of my experience, I had gone into television and worked in television in Philadelphia, had a lot of shows going really great, and I was called back for the Korean War. And in the Korean War, I flew artillery spotter planes over the front lines. Not my favorite activity. You're 2 hours over the front line in every mission, and I flew 85 combat missions. So I'm very proud of that and very proud of my military career and very proud about being a Marine.
Well, and we're proud to have you here, Ed. Is there anything in your career that you wish you would have done? Anything out there that you just haven't accomplished yet?
Well, you know, I've really had a great career. I played on Broadway. I replaced Alan King in a play on Broadway for 2 weeks. So I've had that experience. I often thought about writing books. Now I've written about 6 books. One of them, the Here's Johnny book, made the bestseller list. Now I have this book, When Television Was Young, and I'm very proud of that. I put a lot of effort into that book. So I pretty much have done everything that I wanted to do in this business. I've been very lucky.
Good for you. And you're doing some film. You were in a little bit of Bewitched a couple years ago, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you remember that.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, would you still do movie roles if they came your way?
Something came along that I liked. My best role was in a movie called Fun with Dick and Jane, the original. with George Segal and Jane Fonda.
Oh, sure. That came out in 77, yeah.
That's still good, a good movie.
Classics. Classics. Let's go east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George, John, veteran caller from Columbia, South Carolina.
Hi, John.
A moment that will stand in history is when Ed and Johnny had on the French ambassador, and the United States and France were not getting along very well at that moment. And I swear, I think Ed McMahon handed Johnny a pie, and he threw it in the French ambassador's face.
Do you remember that, Ed?
I don't remember that, no.
Tell us about that, John, more.
It happened. You know, the United States and France has this on and off again love affair, but Johnny asked the
Wait a minute, I do remember that now, yes.
Yep, it's coming back.
Between the United States and France, and he just kind of abruptly said, Ed, came in the pie, and he threw in his face.
I remember that now. The guy came out and was speaking French, kind of broken French, and then he got hit with the pie.
That was great. Anyway, I just wanted to say hi. I love Ed McMahon, and I love you, George, to death. Just, you guys have a great night.
All right, thanks, Chuck.
Thank you.
What was Doc Severinsen like, Ed?
Well, he was great, a great musician. I saw Doc a few months ago. He appeared at the Cerritos Arts Center, and he had the big band, and he was there. And I surprised him because he didn't know I was in the audience. A friend of mine had gotten tickets, and I snuck in. So when the show was over, you know how they have what they call meet and greets.
Oh, sure.
They take pictures with certain sponsors and certain, you know, benefactors of the theater. And I rushed down and got outside his dressing room. So when he walked out to take those pictures, he couldn't believe it. I was standing there. You know, I had no idea I was in the audience. But he looks great. He's going to retire. He's been traveling with the big band and, you know, doing his trumpet work. Still the greatest trumpet player I ever heard. But he is going to retire, so that's going to put a void, I think, in the music world.
What was it like doing that last Tonight Show?
Oh, that was quite emotion-filled. You know, we knew it was ending. We hated to have it end. And we wanted to go out with a bang, which we did. And a thing that happened at the end of that was quite interesting. Johnny walked off. You know, he did that little goodbye speech on the stool.
Yeah.
Then he walked off. And as he passed me, he looked at me and just kind of nodded his head, you know, like, well, pal, we did it, you know, which was a moment I treasured.
That sends chills up my spine.
Yeah.
Hey, Ed, when I'm back in Los Angeles, and I live there about 70% of the time, I'm going to call you. Let's get together.
Let's do that, George. I'd like to.
You want to do a Here's Johnny for us?
Sure. You ready?
You got it.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
I love it. Ed McMahon, when television was young, live, spontaneous, and in living black and white. Thanks, Ed.
Thank you, George. I really enjoyed it.
Me too. All around the country, you just heard a television icon, but more importantly, just a nice person. And that's what we need in this world. We need more people like Ed McMahon. I'll be back in just a moment. We've got a couple hours of open lines for you now. We'll give you the numbers in just a moment. Just about anything goes. And again, if you need to email me, it's very simple. That's george@coasttocoastam.com. And also, I'll tell you a little bit about the trip to Norfolk when we come back. We've got the Talk Fest going on. And again, those of you who live in the greater Norfolk, Virginia area, come on down. The event is free. And people are lining up already around the convention center to get in. No, I'm kidding. But do come on by. I'd love to say hi to you. And you get a chance to meet the producer Tommy, who came by. And I'll tell you what happened to Tom on his way to Norfolk in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back.